The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We look forward to catching up with Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com as he joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates hotline. If you have a question or comment for Brent, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Brent's appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. Brent Hubbs, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Hope you guys are doing well, and hope everybody else out there is hanging in there okay.
Yes, sir. Happy to say that is the case, and like you, I very much hope that stays the case. I know it's been just a different world over these last 3 weeks. It was 3 weeks ago that essentially the curtain closed on just about everything, and as everything fell in line with what started, I guess, with the NBA. But tell me, you and Bob did the last Vol calls for this year, this past Monday, and so what is it like to kind of head into what is thought to be the Tennessee off season with more questions than answers at this point in time?
Well, we're dealing with the same challenges that everybody else is dealing with. I mean, you know, you're trying to run a business, and the business is focused on sports and athletics, and there's not a whole lot going on right now. So, you know, you come up with some different creative things to do. We're doing a couple of different things with our podcast. We're continuing to cover recruiting, even though, you know, coaches are not out on the road recruiting, and kids can't make official, unofficial or official visits. Obviously, Tennessee picked up two commitments this week, and so there's been some movement on the recruiting front. And, you know, you do full coverage of that. We're doing bios, updated bios on all the signees on weekend content that Eric Kane's doing for us. And, you know, you try to cover what's out there and try to give some, you know, people some relief on, and, you know, maybe get them to listen to some stuff or look at some stuff that's not the same, you know, refresh on social media that they're seeing every day that, again, depending on what you read or who you read, you know, it's varying degrees of kind of where we're at, where we're going right now. So trying to provide a little relief for everybody and run a business like everybody else is right now.
One of the things that you guys are doing at VolQuest, and I know you have to be enjoying it, is the deep dive on some of Tennessee's classic games. And this week you guys took on the 95 Tennessee trip to Alabama. And I'm just wondering, from your vantage point, what is it like to go back in with all that you've done in covering the football team and getting to know so many of the people already who were a part of that game? But what's it like to go back and rewatch something like that and perhaps pick up something that you either forgotten or didn't come across the first time?
Well, it's a lot of fun, you know, and again, those are games that I've enjoyed and, you know, that I remember, you know, pretty vividly as big games that stuck out to me. That's kind of why those games got selected. But, you know, you go back and watch them and you think about where you were at that point in time in your life and kind of how different everything was. And, you know, the 92 Florida game, I was actually in the stands watching that game. I was a student at UT, had not begun any kind of media work there. And then the 95 Alabama game was my first road trip, quote, working. I wouldn't say I worked, but that was a road trip. And you and I did Saturday morning sports talk at a business establishment down near Pellissippi Parkway or down towards Turkey Creek, which wasn't there at the time. But down that way, we did Saturday sports talk. And then I got in a car with Mike Keith and a couple other guys, and we drove to that game from there and then drove back after that game and got home about 5:30 in the morning, I guess it was, maybe 6. And then I had a 30-minute radio sports cast to do on AM 990, and Mike had to do television. And I'll never forget it. Mike might get mad at me for sharing this story, but I'll never forget. We would roll back into, we hit about Watt Road, and Mike had a car phone, and he said, "Watch this." And the IVK DJ, and I don't remember who it was, had just played a Shania Twain song. She was just gotten really popular in one of her first hits. And it had just, it was finishing up, or it just finished. And Mike called in the hotline at IVK, the bat phone, in his best Bobby Denton voice, and convinced the DJ to play that same song again. So on that particular Sunday morning at about 5:50 a.m., there were back-to-back Shania Twain songs played because we were trying to stay awake, and we'd been in the car, and we'd worked all day. And, you know, it's just stuff like that, John, that, you know, you just kind of remember along the way. That's just goofy and silly, but it kind of reminds you where you were at that point in life, and kind of how things are different now and how your life has changed. It's been fun to go down memory road.
Brent, I do want to ask you about two of Tennessee's commits. We'll start with the running back, Jalen Wright, out of Durham, North Carolina. He is a speedster, a really good track athlete as well. Your thoughts on Jalen Wright?
Well, it's a guy we've been talking about for a couple of weeks. I've mentioned him on the show a couple of different times, and he came in for an unofficial visit for a junior day with his dad, and you could kind of tell after talking to him after that visit, he was really impressed with Tennessee, really likes Jay Graham. I think Tennessee's in love with his speed. I think Jim Chaney sees him probably as a guy he can use in a variety of ways. I'm not going to call him Alvin Kamara. That's not fair. I'm not saying that. But he's a guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can play in the slot. Probably runs a little better, a little more power than he's given credit for. He's going to get bigger. The interesting thing about him on his team at Durham, they got about four tailbacks they play. So he is not a guy who's going to have a ton of tread on the tires. I mean, he's got a high average per yards per carry, but he does not have a high average per carry or average game per carry, so to speak, and a number of carries per game. So I think he's a guy who's still going to be pretty fresh when he gets here. He's not going to be wore out. And I think the upside for him is really high. This is a guy Jay Graham found quickly after he got here, probably knew him when he was recruiting for Texas A&M. But I think the proximity to Tennessee made him a better fit for Tennessee and Jalen Wright. I think it's a good, you know, pickup. As David Cutcliffe says, speed never had a bad day, and it's certainly he can run. That's his best attribute right now.
Wide receiver Walker Merrill out of Brentwood. He was 6'1", 176, maybe rated by some the best receiver in the state. Your thoughts on Merrill?
Well, I think he's a guy who's a better athlete than given credit for. You know, I think some people look at him, and he's a white kid who plays at, you know, Brentwood, and, you know, a lot of people would say, well, you know, but he's a guy that is a good athlete, better athlete than probably given credit for, you know, and who I think is going to can play special teams early, can play in a variety of ways for you, kind of a blue-collar, hard-working guy. But, again, better athlete than I think given credit for. He's camped at a lot of places. He's got offers from throughout the SEC at some different spots. And, you know, I think Tennessee sees him as a guy who could play, you know, inside or outside, probably end up being more of an inside receiver than an outside receiver at the college level. But is a guy Tennessee's had in camp a couple different times and has evaluated him and obviously liked his game and wanted to get that one done, and he was ready to jump in the boat. So I think that's a solid get for Tennessee.
What are your thoughts on a preferred walk-on linebacker Isaiah Gaddy from Philadelphia?
You know, I think it's important for Tennessee to try to get into that area. Joe Ossovat has done a good job of recruiting in Pennsylvania, and is you're seeing him ramp it up more now that he can go on the road as a full-time assistant. He's had a couple of teams from that up in that area, up in the Philadelphia area. Almost entire teams have been down for unofficial visits to Tennessee. And so, you know, I think that's a guy, I don't know how much he's going to be able to play, but if he can come in and have any success at Tennessee, I think it helps you establish yourself up there, because it's been a while since Tennessee has had a Pennsylvania player with some success. I guess Mark Jones, probably the last guy who's done that. And there's some good players in Pennsylvania. And right now, Ohio State and Penn State are getting all they want. Then I guess Pitt's getting some of the leftovers there. So I think Tennessee's trying to get themselves a bit established. Georgia's been up in that area recruiting a little bit. I think if you can get a guy here who has, you know, who again has a good experience here, I think it's going to help you further down the road recruiting that area.
If you have a question or comment for Brent, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Brent, surprised at all to see some momentum when it comes to the recruiting trail, just because it is such a unique time?
No, I mean, not completely. I mean, I don't think you're going to see mass amounts of commitments. I mean, Ohio State's been hot, you know, but these were two guys who were close to doing something before all of this happened and came about. They were on Tennessee's campus recently. Both of them wanted to get things done, you know, pretty early in the process. So I'm not stunned by those two. I don't know that Tennessee is in a position to get three or four more in any kind of short term fashion, but they might land another one here or there, another two here and there. But, you know, I think some of these guys have been on campuses multiple times. And so, you know, you're seeing some guys who are securing a reservation. You're seeing some guys who are ready to be done. And right now you have a lot of guys trying to figure out, what am I supposed to be doing? You know, what should I be doing with my recruitment? Obviously, they can't go anywhere, but should I end it? You know, I'm not sure if that's where I want to go, but do I want to reserve my spot there because I'm not sure I'm going to get to visit any other places? It's a little bit like kids transferring, you know. I mean, how many football transfers are you going to see, you know, at the end of this semester? I mean, because you didn't have a spring practice to kind of figure out, you know, where you fit in and where you didn't fit in and should you stay or should you go? I think you got some recruits right now are going, am I going to get to see any place else? And if I don't, you know, if I wait too long, am I going to have a spot at the places I have seen? So I think there's some guys feeling some pressure that way. I'm going to be interested to see what happens this summer. Right now we have no recruiting, no, you know, on-campus or off-campus face-to-face recruiting through the end of May. Does that get extended into the summer? If so, how long? You know, would it be all summer? And then if you're starting to get into that, does the NCAA look at eliminating the early signing period this year? Do they continue with the early signing period? Do kids feel pressure to sign somewhere when they can't take all their visits in the fall? I think that the recruiting timeline and the recruiting calendar is going to be really interesting to watch, and I think it's going to have some shifts and alterations to it depending on how long this current dead period we're in right now continues.
Let's get a call from Jeremy. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well. Hope you are.
Hey, Brent. I got two questions. First one's recruiting from last year's class. Do you think Amari Thomas will get any significant playing time his freshman year?
You know, I mean, that's a good question. I think the biggest question with Amari right now is, when's he going to get to come to campus? What kind of shape is he going to be in when he gets here? If it's, you know, let's say we have a full regular college football season, okay, because that's what I'm praying for every day. So let's say that's what we're going to have, but kids can't get here till July. Okay, well, what kind of shape does he get in? How quickly can he get ready to play during the season? What if they can't make it to August? Then he's got 3 or 4 weeks before you play a game that he's got to get ready to play. So I don't know, and in Tennessee's returning everybody on the defensive line. So I don't know that I would deem it significant playing time, but I think that's going to be up to Amari, too, in terms of what kind of shape he arrives in. But one thing, you know, one of the things with him is there are guys in front of him on the depth chart who are, you know, good players or significant contributors to the defensive line. So we'll have to see what he gets here. He certainly has the talent, just as he's going to be ready out of the gate.
Right, and then my final question is for all three of you. I asked you last week the fun question about the two players you could choose. So I'm going to switch it up a little bit. This is for you all three of you. You could go back to any season, but if you got to choose these three games that made a difference in how the season would play, the upcoming season, and how it would affect recruiting for Tennessee, would you get a mulligan for the LSU-Tennessee SEC championship in 2001, or would you like to redo the Florida and Oklahoma games?
Oh, that's a good
one. In 2015. In 2015. Depending on how how that could have shaped, you know, the landscape in Tennessee recruiting and the upcoming season.
I'm going to go LSU in 01. I just think not only the opportunity to win an SEC championship again, but you would have played for a national championship. It would have been your second in 4 years, and you would have been playing in the Rose Bowl. I think, boy, that scene was just so set up for a fantastic national title game. I can't find one that I think would exceed that one, Brent. I like the LSU 01 game as far as the impact for Tennessee.
Well, here's the thing I would throw into that game, too. I would pick that game simply because it's the one before the other two that he mentioned. And if you could change the fortunes of that night in 01, what is it? How does it change the fortunes for the last 15 years for the Tennessee program? Okay, so, I mean, if that happens in 01, does Philip Fulmer then go out on his own terms as a coach later in his career? Do they have somebody in place to, as a groom successor who's ready to go, and there's a plan in place to hire somebody, as opposed to, okay, we're gonna get rid of Philip Fulmer, and then we're going to go 180 degree opposite Lane Kiffin, and then so on and so on. So, I mean, I think from the significance and ramification standpoint, I think the 0-1 game was the biggest loss that I've covered in terms of following this program. So I would have to pick the 0-1 game. Do I think if Tennessee had beaten Oklahoma and Baker Mayfield, do I think that would have helped Tennessee? Sure. I mean, I don't think it would have hurt in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, that program, you know, still under Butch Jones, still should have got to the SEC championship game and didn't. I mean, you could go back and look at the loss at South Carolina costing them the SEC East as the most important loss that you've had the last 5 years, because if he wins that and wins the East, I don't know, Butch Jones might still be the football coach at Tennessee.
Yeah, I'll say this. I agree with you guys on the 0-1 LSU game. If Tennessee wins that game, I don't think Lane Kiffin is ever the coach in Knoxville, and I don't think Derek Dooley becomes the coach in Knoxville. But I also think, just to throw out a different game, Brent, it would be that South Carolina game, because if you get to the SEC championship game, if you win the Eastern Division, then who knows exactly what the tale that's told from that point forward is. I still think that perhaps that we might have just seen a change, because I just don't think that Butch Jones was building a foundation that would be sustained success, because I just don't think he was recruiting to fit what the operations were and the styles of play that he was looking for. I think he was looking for star players that he could say, we just signed this star player, as opposed to, we need this guy to play the defense we want to play or the offense we want to play. But the 0-1 LSU game would be my answer, but more recently, that South Carolina game would have been pivotal. If you win that game, then who knows exactly what the path is. I still think it would have been down, but that's a really good question, Jeremy. Thank you very much. Hope you stay safe and be well. We'll get a break and be back. We've got more with Brent Hubbs. To join us, 656-9900. 656-9900 is how you join us on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Turn us up and embarrass the Alabama fan that sits in the next cubicle. This is 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. If you have a question or comment for Brent, 656-9900, 656-9900. Brent's appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. Let's go to the phones and check in with Steve. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Hey. Bria, could you talk about the big lineman out in North Carolina that committed to us a week or two ago? And also about the, three commitments out of the state of Alabama. And the first two is the ones I want you to talk about. Talk about them and the big lineman from North Carolina, how they're rated, or, you know, what you think you know about them as players.
Sure. Isaac Washington is the defensive tackle or defensive lineman from over North Carolina, 6'3", 265. He's a three-star guy. I think he'll move up and have a chance to be a four-star player when it's all said and done. I like his game. I think Tennessee likes He's really long. He's got some length to him, the long arms. I think that's something that's intriguing to Tennessee. Committed, and Tracy Rocker left. He decommitted and opened things back up, but he kept in relation, kept in contact with Jeremy Pruitt regularly, and came over here for a junior day and met Jimmy Brumbaugh, the new defensive line coach. His mom was over, and they fell right back in love with Tennessee, and he committed to Tennessee. And I think he's solid. You know, there were several other schools trying to get involved there, but I think he's pretty solid at Tennessee right now. I think that's a solid get. I think Tennessee probably has him higher on the board of defensive linemen in North Carolina than some other people do in terms of their evaluation of him versus even a guy like Peyton Page, who I think is a good player. I think Tennessee would take Peyton Page, but I think they like Washington a lot. The two Alabama kids you're referring to, I guess, is Jay Jones, who's a DB, 6'1", 170 is his size. Could play nickel, could end up playing safety, but they weren't trying him at corner. He believes he can play corner as a shutdown guy. And then Jordan Mosley is a speedy wide receiver from down in Mobile that T. Martin has recruited. He obviously knows Mobile very well. 6 foot, 180. Again, a guy who could move, and when you look at his tape, he's pretty impressive in terms of going and getting the ball in the air. He snatches it out of the air pretty good, pretty dynamic with it in his hands as well. He's a four-star guy out of Mobile. So those are the three that you're talking about, Steve.
Okay. Well, okay then. Brian, I tell you what, y'all are being very strong talking about all these players, the people like me and everybody else, and knowing there may not be a darn football season. But so, like you said, Brent, you're praying every day for a football season. So I think I'll start doing that too.
Sounds good, man. We appreciate it, Steve.
Yep.
Okay.
Steve, thank you very much. Be safe. And let's go next to Steve. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Fine. And yourself?
I'm fine. This is Swanee Steve, not recruiting Steve.
Okay.
But I listen to you guys every day. I enjoy your show, all of your shows that you have that I catch. I don't know what we would do without you guys right now. It's you know, that's how things are that tough. But I wanted to ask Brent, you keep talking about some games they're replaying. Where do you find these at? And maybe I'll need to advertise that a little more.
Well, you can find them on YouTube, and that's there are hundreds of classic games on YouTube. There's a guy in Nashville who's a longtime subscriber to BallQuest, but is a big Tennessee fan. He's a subscriber to other sites as well. He's put a bunch of games up on there. All you got to do is pick out the game you want to watch and type it into YouTube and in the search in YouTube, and there's a good chance you're going to be able to pop it up and watch it. And it's a great time to great way to pass the time and get a little ball in and go back and relive some moments that you like. What we're doing at BallQuest is we're highlighting 12 or 13 games. It may end up being more than that. It initially started as being 12 or 13 games. And what we're doing as a staff is we're going back and rewatching that game, and then we're talking about it a little bit of X's and O's football-wise, you know, just about some things that stood out and watching it. Because, you know, not everybody has seen it recently. Not everybody was there. Not everybody on the staff remembers it. And so we're talking about the game from an X's and O's standpoint, the significance of that game. And then as a part of the podcast, too, we have a former player on who reflects on that game. So, for example, Joey Kent was on this past week's podcast on Monday to talk about his remembrances of that 95 Alabama game. I'll give you a little teaser. Next Monday's is the 96 Citrus Bowl, Tennessee's win over Ohio State. And Bill Duff's going to be on with us to talk about that. He had a big fourth down stop in that game, and kind of fun to catch up with those former players and talk about that. Bill shares some great stories off the field as well as on the field. So that's what we're doing every Monday on the site.
I think you would make a little money if you – put these games on DVD with John Ward doing the voiceover. I think that would be pretty.
I don't have the rights or the ability to do that. That's a Ball Network decision. That's not anything on my in my resume to be able to do anything like that.
Okay. I'm going to just want to say how much I thank the doctors and nurses for what they're doing. Don't forget people like the truck drivers. Where will we be without them? And if this virus ever hits them, that will paralyze us. And also, like my son works at Walmart stocking shelves and stuff. These poor kids are on the front line themselves. So don't forget them.
Very much so, Steve. We, one, appreciate your listening. Thank you for calling, and hope you and yours stay safe. And couldn't do it, Brent, without so many that are doing the best they can to keep our lives as close to normal as possible, whether it be the maintenance crews that are trying to make sure that wherever you're getting your treatments, that that place is sanitized and ready for you to go in for whatever treatment you need. Truck drivers, what about the doctor's offices where it might be, say, your dentist, but if you have an emergency need, they're there to help. And so appreciate everyone that's trying to keep things going as close to normal as possible.
Absolutely. And we got to do our part. You know, we all want to try to help local businesses as much as we can, which I understand, but we've also got a responsibility at this point in time to stay at home and stay away and, try to do everything we can to slow this thing down and get it moving in the right direction. So certainly grateful and thankful for those who are putting themselves in harm's way every day for an essential job. And hopefully we can do our part as a community to maybe realize what's essential and what's not essential for us in terms of our needs every day in our lives and help them out as well.
Our guest, Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. We'll get a break. We've got more with Brent coming up. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Brent's appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal. Sports Talk rolls on with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com. If you have a question or comment for Brent, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900.
Brent, what do you see as the impact that E.J. Anasicki, the transfer from Sacred Heart, 6'6", about 245, what do you see his impact being on the men's basketball team?
On the glass, on the boards, rebounding. I think that's probably of his skill set, that's probably what will translate the best and make him the most productive. I'm not saying he can't score, but I think his skill set of defending, but rebounding the basketball, I think is going to be where he helps Tennessee the most. And that's an area of help where Tennessee needs. They need some depth there. They need to, help Fulkerson with some depth, and they need some guys who can get on the glass. I know he's not the tallest guy. He's not a 7-footer or 6'11 guy or whatever, but I think he knows how to position himself and rebound, and I think he'll be an effective rebounder in the SEC and for Tennessee, and I think that's where he'll help them the most.
I feel obliged to ask this question. Where do you think running back Zach Evans is going to go?
You know, Jimmy, again, we were talking earlier about, kids trying to – the pressure of trying to figure out what to do and this, that, or the other. He obviously can't take – he's got one official visit left. He obviously can't take it at this point. He can't take it through the month of May. So the question, and if recruiting is closed through part of the summer or all the summer, the question becomes, obviously he's not going to be able to take that fifth visit, and so he's just going to show up somewhere. And so I think Florida's out. I don't think he'll end up at Florida. I know a lot of people thought he was going to go there because the Gators were set to get the last visit, but I don't think he'll take that official visit because I don't think the timing's going to work. And so I think the Gators are out. I don't think it's going to be A&M. I know that's the closest to home, but I think there's been and then this may have changed, but there have been some people close to him who have felt like it would be in his best interest to get away from home. And so people close to him being family have felt like it would do him good to get, further away from home than staying close to home. So I don't think it's going to be an A&M. So if that's the case, then it gets back down to me that is Tennessee or Ole Miss. And I think what's going to happen, Jimmy, he's going to show up somewhere. in July or August, if kids are allowed to come to campus, and I think, you know, hope that they will be, I think he's going to show up somewhere and go to school there. So I think it's Tennessee or Ole Miss. I think had it not been a dead period, he would have visited Florida officially, but he would have also unofficially visited Tennessee and Ole Miss again. But now I don't think that's going to be possible, so I think it's going to come down to kind of his gut feel between, you know, does he feel like Ole Miss is a better fit for him depth chart-wise, system-wise, and everything else, or does he feel like Tennessee is a better fit for him? So it's going to be one of those two places.
Brent, do you think it's going to be interesting to watch in-state players? I think that most people would say that last year was a better year for in-state football prospects than this year. But I just wonder if there might be some players that play their way into being Power 5 conference prospects that you might not have thought going in, just because we haven't had a chance to see some in camps and so forth. So they're going to have to play their way in during the course of the season, provided we do have a season.
Well, I think that that gets back to the question of how patient are college coaches going to be.
Yeah.
How much are they going to continue to evaluate, you know, and really evaluate guys throughout the fall, or are they going to, you know, are they going to fill up and take guys based on their evaluations from last fall, based on their evaluations from tape they've watched this spring, going by and seeing a kid in January? You know, how many more kids get an opportunity because that they, you know, they're truly evaluated, you know, this fall? And again, I think it goes back to part of this is, is there going to be a early signing period? And if there is, will kids not sign early? Or do they feel like they have to sign early because if they don't, they may lose a spot? Mm-hmm. That's why I wonder if they're going to wipe the early signing period off for this year, just to take some of the, I have to make a decision now, even though you don't, you know, but they have to make a decision now. Will kids really delay the decision, or will they make a less informed decision because they haven't visited as many places? I don't know. I think that's a question to watch. If the calendar gets delayed, Jimmy, and it gets on back into the normal February signing date, and that's when they sign, I think the answer to your question is yes. I think some guys could play themselves into more offers because I think guys are going to be evaluated the first 5 weeks of the season heavier than they've ever been evaluated because there wasn't the summer camp time to evaluate them between their junior and senior seasons.
Let's go back to the phones where Doug joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Doug.
Afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, Doug.
Afternoon. Hope you're well.
Doing well here in Hooterville. That was an interesting discussion about the games you'd like to change. So I'd like to kind of take that and change it into the three terrible decisions Tennessee made that got us where we were. In January of 1999, we were sitting on top of the college football world and could have hired any offensive coordinator in the nation. And Fulmer goes out after an extensive nationwide search, and dadgum finds out the best candidate is his running backs coach, Randy Sanders. And I don't think that was a bad decision,
Doug.
You don't?
I don't disagree. Nope, I don't disagree with the decision to hire Randy
Sanders.
Did you
think the Florida game in 99, he was shaking like a leaf in the press box?
His first game, he won a national championship in 98.
He didn't win that. You know, Brent, that the offense is established 6 months before it. He called some good plays, and Fulmer might have called them. And they only scored 16 points in that game because seven of them came on the second pass.
Okay. I don't think he would, Doug, you don't like Randy's work. I think Randy was a solid offensive coordinator at Tennessee. I think Randy Sanders took the fall in 05, okay, and tried to help out Philip Fulmer there. And obviously bringing David Cutcliffe back, Tennessee was good. But I think in 01 that was a good offense. I think that Randy Sanders in 04, look what he did with freshman quarterbacks and young wide receivers. I don't think Randy Sanders was as bad of an offensive coordinator as you do, but that's my opinion. Go ahead.
Well, I agree. I agree he was solid, but you just won the national championship, and you could hire virtually any offensive coordinator in the country.
Who was number one on your list? Who did you want?
I don't know. I'd have to go back, but I certainly would have hired somebody that actually been an offensive coordinator in his life when you've just won the national championship. wouldn't you?
I think that they were going to stay with the same offense that Philip Fulmer ran, that David Cutcliffe ran, that Randy Sanders had grew up in, and I think that's where they went because it was always going to be Philip's offense.
And that's right, and that's why Philip ended up getting fired that year. So, another thing is Patrick Willis.
He got fired because he had it. Hold on. He got fired because he had an offensive coordinator that wasn't in his offense, and that offense was terrible because it was doing things that he didn't do on offense. Go ahead.
And that's right, and that's the only bad year that coach has ever had, right?
Bad what do you say here? About that? That means he's a bad coach.
Offense.
Well, hey, I'm saying.
What about Patrick Willis?
Hold on. Hang on, Doug. Can I finish the Dave Clawson comment or no?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay,
I didn't mean to cut
Dave Clawson was Dave Clawson's a very good football coach. He was a bad fit here because his offense was different than what they had run in the past, and not everybody bought into his offense, and so that's why he was a bad fit here. Not everybody who's a great coach is a good fit where they were. Bob Schoop was a bad fit in Butch Jones's offense, or Butch Jones as a defensive coordinator, personality wise. They were not good fits. That's why Clawson is not a bad coach at all. Look what he's done at Wake Forest. He was a bad fit here.
Well, shouldn't Fulmer, and he got that worked out before he hired him? If you're hiring somebody, wouldn't you make sure they're on the same page you are at Ballcliff?
Well, yeah, but I'm saying it was a bad hire. I'm not saying he was a bad coach. You're saying why did he not work here? I'm telling you, it was a person. Their personalities, their style of play did not mesh each other. That's why it didn't work here. But Dave Clawson is not a bad football coach. It's a bad hire.
I understand.
No question.
But my point about Fulmer is I think he actually learned his lesson when he helped Pruitt go out and hire who's your offensive coordinator? Anyway, if he'd hired the equivalent of Chaney back in 99, he might still very well be the coach here, and we might have won three or four more national championships. You know, this
what
is the toughest conference in the world. What?
Yes, it is. What are your other two missteps?
Patrick Willis and Randall Cobb. How can you miss Randall Cobb when he plays a mile up the road from where you live?
It was a bad decision. Randall wanted to play quarterback, and Tennessee wasn't going to recruit him as a quarterback. That's why David Cutcliffe didn't recruit him.
You took a quarterback from a tennis playing quarterback from Jackson instead of Patrick Willis, right?
Mm-hmm. to get Daniel Brooks. Look, we can pick everything apart on the man. I mean, you can go back and pick. The coaching hires are the mistakes because that's what got people fired. Philip Fulmer didn't lose his job because he didn't take Randall Cobb. He didn't lose his job because he didn't take Patrick Willis. Would they have been good players here? Absolutely. But Tennessee had good defensive players. They were not a Patrick Willis away from winning two more national titles. They weren't a Randall Cobb away from winning a national title. Would they have helped and had good careers here? Yes. Did they make mistakes in recruiting them? Absolutely. But those are two catastrophic mistakes that have put Tennessee in the position they've been in the last 10 years.
Oh, sure, I agree. Either one of them ever beat us. But, boy, I think the thing that he was missing in his last years was that spark plug on the offense that Cobb would have provided.
Well, I don't think there's any question that Randall Cobb would have made any team he was a part of better. But, Jimmy, where I was going was look where Tennessee was rated in recruiting at the time that Philip Fulmer was forced to step down.
At that time, if memory serves, their class was ranked about number 6 in the country. They had two really good quarterbacks that were committed, Bryce Petty and Taj Boyd. They had an offensive lineman named Morgan Moses, who may still be playing in the NFL. Philip Fulmer thought he was going to get the receiver out of Memphis named Brown, I think was his name. They had a really good class that was shaping up. Brent's right about the Randall Cobb. Tennessee recruited him. As a receiver, he wanted to play quarterback. So then Tennessee came back and said, okay, well, we'll give you a shot at quarterback. Well, it was too late by then. And then he went to Kentucky, and what did he do? He played primarily receiver. Played Summit quarterback, because they had an injury there. But anyway, that's kind of what that went down.
You know who recruited him to Kentucky?
Randy Sanders.
Yeah, the worst mistake, right, Doug?
We'll get a break. That's Brent Hubbs with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. To join us, 656-9900. We've got one more segment with Brent. To get a question or comment in under the wire, 656-9900. That's how you join 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The Sports Animal and Alexa are best friends. Just tell her, Alexa, enable the 99.1 The Sports Animal skill.
Skill enabled.
Then anytime you want immediate Tennessee sports info, say, Alexa, play 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Okay, playing 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Segment to hour number three of Sports Talk with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson, our guest Brent Hubbs of allquest.com. If you have a question or comment for Brent, 656-9900, 656-9900. Brent, we did see coming down from the Division I Council, the NCAA, it'll be an extra year of eligibility for the spring sport athletes. And, of course, you've got Ryan Schubert, who does such a nice job following baseball for VolQuest. But what are your immediate reactions to what could be just really a logistical nightmare for just trying to manage exactly what's most fair to what players in what class as Tennessee will now prepare for its next baseball season whenever that comes?
Well, I think the biggest question, first of all, for all schools who have, you know, with spring sports is how many of those seniors are going to come back for another year? Are they going to move on in their life and you know, they've graduated, they got a job waiting for them, or they're, you know, engaged to be married, or they're married, or they're, you know, whatever. How many of the athletes will come back for that extra year as seniors? And then based on that number, my first thought is it's going to be really expensive for some schools. And I think there are some lower-level schools, non-Power 5 schools, that financially they may not be able to have all of them come back. Or if they do, it's going to be at a reduced scholarship rate because I'm not sure they can financially afford to continue to do that if a significant number of student-athletes want to come back for their senior year. So that's my first thought is, A, how many are actually going to do it? And then based on that number, how financially feasible is it for the school to be able to pay for all of them to come back under the same scholarship guidelines they're currently under?
Brent, I just got one question, and it may be hard to answer, but I wonder how much you think it might hurt Harrison Bailey that it looks like he's going to have limited work before the start of his freshman season at Tennessee.
Well, I think it hurts him significantly in the competition to be the quarterback, to be the starting quarterback. I think it has to. And that's not because he's suddenly a less talented player or not good enough necessarily, but you know, not having 15 days of practice, not having the classroom time with Jim Chaney. I know they're doing some stuff on Zoom or Skype or whatever, but that's not the same as getting in the office and going and breaking down film that way. I don't think there's any doubt about this. I mean, if you go back, and you got to go back many years because it's, you know, we're now in a world where every kid comes in May and they're here all summer long to get ready for a football season. But if you're not here then, you'd go back, and I think Ainge and Schaefer both came in July, Jimmy, if I'm not mistaken. And both of them played as freshmen because they were the best two guys. But that was unique that was the only option Tennessee had. I mean, I don't know if they had an established guy on their roster who had had some success. I don't know that either one of those guys would have played, and they were pretty limited, even though they beat up on UNLV, and they were pretty limited early. And again, it's a credit to Eric Ainge and to what Randy Sanders did that year. And I'm not picking on you guys. I'm just pointing out that year to what they did with what he did with freshman quarterback that year. You go back to 94, what Peyton was, you would know this better than me, Jimmy. Peyton had been on campus about 3 weeks before he went into the game at UCLA, 3.5, because he was an August arrival, right? He did not come second session summer school. So he only had about 3 weeks to get ready, and clearly he wasn't ready to play those first couple of weeks. look how limited he was there. So to your point with Harrison Bailey, I think it's definitely a setback in terms of being ready to play in this system and being in a position to compete for the job in August if we have football practice in August.
Brent, what's going on these days at VolQuest.com?
Well, continuing with those podcasts that we talked about on Monday, and then on Wednesdays we're doing a season review, going back and looking at last year's games and kind of talking about what you see upon rewatch that is important for Tennessee for this coming year with the roster they have returning. Doing a mailbag podcast on Fridays. We'll have a little mini-style war room in the morning with a little more in-depth on what you were asking me about seniors getting that extra year of eligibility. We got plenty of recruiting coverage out there as well, and we'll continue to do that. Hope to catch up with a couple of guys in a little bit of a different facet here in the next few days. And then this weekend we'll have an update on Keyshawn Lawrence and an update on Omari Thomas as well as we kind of do our bios on signees who will be here later this summer or this fall for their start of their college careers.
Well, Brent, we certainly appreciate the time. Hope you all have a great weekend and hope everybody stays safe. But we look forward to catching up with you next week.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brent.
Thank you. That's Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com as he joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. His appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. Hour number four of Sports Talk is coming up. We look forward to catching up with Vol for Life, Andre Lipsius of the Detroit Tigers organization. That's after your chance to showcase your trivia challenge, your trivia skills with the Sports Fix at 6. That's next on 99.1, The Sports Animal.